Hey everyone, welcome to the Operation Dichotomy podcast, where our mission is to bridge the gap between you and me by embracing a culture of listening. As usual, today I'm joined by my co-host, Jedediah Kim.
And hey everyone.
You may see this on video, you may not be, but he is completely decked out in Operation Dichotomy gear. He's matching the colors and everything. Looks really good. So you got the new hoodie on, JD. How is it?
Oh man, it feels really comfy too. That's the beautiful thing about it. The hat is great. The hoodie fit is great. And the hoodie is like so thin and breathable and light. It's really awesome. You guys should all get one.
But it's warm too.
It's true. It's very warm.
That's what happens when quality, you get quality. So you can connect with us at operation.comedy.com or at operation.comedy on Instagram. Let's get that out of the way. We are going to just go straight into it today because we actually started talking about what we're about to start talking about. And what usually happens is halfway through these conversations that I have with Mr. Jedediah over here is that we look back and like, damn, we should have recorded it. And so that's what we did. We got about 2.5 sentences in. I cut him off and we started recording. So that's where we're at. But what we were just about to start talking about in light of everything that's going on in this world, but also this time period being right before November 3rd, is this issue of voting and how we approach voting, how we approach the different issues and policies and character traits and all this other stuff that complicates the voting process when we want to make it simpler than it actually is. And then if it were to get a little bit more nuanced, because JD and I are both more familiar with the quote-unquote Christian background, we're probably going to address that a little bit today as well. So like I said, let's just get into it, man. We were talking about voting, and we went straight into the pro-life versus pro-choice, especially from the quote-unquote Christian perspective or church perspective. And you started talking about single issue voters. So let's just go right into it, man. What were you talking about? Let's go.
Yeah, so I think that this issue is so important, and it's a really relevant issue right now, this issue of single issue voters, because many Christians out there, evangelical Christians, conservative Christians, are like, I will not vote for a candidate who is going to be pro-choice on any level. And they literally are like, this is the hill that I will not die on, right? This is the line drawn in the sand. And so they will essentially choose a pro-life candidate, even if like that candidate makes life miserable for a lot of other people who are also alive. Like, it doesn't matter because this issue is so, so important. And so I've been thinking a lot about this, and I've been trying to understand, well, how do we navigate it, right? What does the phrase pro-life even mean? If we are saying that we are pro-life from conception to death, right? Is it okay to be pro-life about unborn children and unborn humans, but then the humans who are alive, who are being affected, right? To not care about those individuals as well. And so I think it's complex, but I think it's worthwhile for us to talk about, because this abortion issue is the one that is difficult for many conservative Christians to get over in terms of voting for, someone who isn't just a conservative Republican candidate.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think of all things, it's this one singular issue? Specifically, you know, when we say pro-life versus pro-choice, we're talking about the issue of abortion. And even with abortion, there's so many questions, right? Like, at what point does life really begin? Is it conception? Is there science behind that? What does the Bible say? Question after question after question. Some people say it's a heartbeat. And I know I've read all the theological books and arguments for all these different things, but I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in my memory of what I've studied in seminary and even in scripture, there isn't one specific passage that says life happens at this specific moment. And so even when I talk to the most conservative pastors, they'll differ on at what point does life really begin. And I think part of the whole issue is that's why some confusion exists, right? But when we're talking about abortion, we're talking about pro-life in terms of, hey, this is an unborn child. It's a baby's life that we're protecting, versus the pro-choice, where a woman has the right to choose what happens to her body, her womb, et cetera, et cetera. I get the gravity of the issue, but why do you think it's the one issue where a lot of Christians are like you said, this is the hill that I'm going to die on? Why don't you provide us some context? I feel like you've more.
Yeah. Firstly, like when you look at the biblical narrative, like child sacrifices was awesome. Was usually something that was associated with idolatry. I think there's a god called Molech, and the people who worship Molech sacrifice their children to Molech. And so that in it itself, like within Christian identity, right? This thing that says like, we're not going to follow a false god, you know, so important right from the beginning of when God was interacting with his people from the Ten Commandments, like, follow me, you know, you'll be blessed, follow me. And so I think that that's part of the association. I think another thing is that historically, I can't remember if it's, it may have been Josephus. Josephus was like a Roman historian writer. And again, I might be wrong, but I think it was him who was chronicling the descriptors of Christians and how they differed from Romans. And one of the things that was written about that first group of people who called themselves Christians was that they did not kill the unborn child in the womb, whereas other Romans in that time did. And that was a distinct marker, right? That there was a sanctity of life. And then I think, like, you know, so it's kind of been rooted in our history and tradition for a long time. I think the reason why, like, modern Christians gravitate towards it, I mean, similarly for the foundations of these reasons, but, you know, like when we talk about like fighting for the oppressed and fighting for those who are marginalized and like speaking up for those who don't have a voice, like unborn children don't have a voice. They don't have the ability to do anything, right? And so I feel like that Christians like have this impulse to want to stand, you know, for those who cannot stand on their own. And an unborn child, you know, in a womb, you know, doesn't have a voice, literally, you know. Or maybe they do, you know, in their mother's womb or something, or it's being formed. I don't want to get into science of all that, but I'm just saying that, like, in terms of their life, they're like, I'm going to be an ally. And I think that's just kind of how it's come to be. You know, I think that there's been this, the idea that a woman can choose her own freedom, I think maybe just feels inherently selfish, you know, to many Christians. So I don't know. I think it's really complex, and obviously everyone has their different reasons, but I think, you know, both within the history and within the foundational like ways of thinking for Christians, it's always been an issue to stand with, you know, unborn children, these lives, these humans who can't stand for themselves.
And it makes sense. Like, it would be, I feel like it would take a special kind of messed up person to look at unborn children who are dying, if you indeed agree that that's what abortion is, and not stand up for them, right? Like, imagine born children, 2-3 years old, they're dying. Like, who wouldn't stand for this? So I can't understand that aspect.
Right.
And I don't want to dig into the issue of abortion too much, just because I feel like this is not really the direction that we want to go. But if I were to say one sort of generalized statement, what I've learned over the years as someone who's been in ministry and then been married to an OBGYN for however many years now, 3-4 years, and just hearing the stories about the kinds of things that she encounters, the different kinds of pregnancies, it's way more complicated than I had ever even imagined. And like, I'm talking about things where even if you have a complete 100% moral, quote unquote, moral clarity on what's right and what's wrong, these situations are so complex that you can't apply it in that gray context, right?
Right, totally.
And I feel like that's one thing that I really wish everyone here could take away from this conversation that we're not having for time's sake, but it's just so much more complicated. And you do your research, look up complicated cases, go find an OBGYN if you want and ask them about some of the things that they've seen. You'll see that this idea of abortion is so much more complicated than, hey, it's you killing a baby versus not killing a baby, because it's simply not that simple, even if you believe that's what abortion is. Okay. So let's leave that there. It's just a complicated matter. But let's talk about what you were talking about before, where we kind of want to talk about how to navigate this, because more than, like, people have different views about different policies, and that's great. But to take one single issue and then have that be the one thing where you won't even open your ears to hear the other policies and other things that's going on, I feel like that's an issue that we need to address, because I feel like we'll be missing the whole picture, the big picture. And by missing the big picture, we may win on that one issue, quote unquote, which is pro-life versus pro-choice, but then lose on everything else where 99% of the other people are negatively affected.
Right.
So where would you begin? If you were to tell somebody, let's say I'm a single issue voter, like, JD, this is one thing that I would never, ever vote against. Where would you suggest that I start in terms of navigating that? What do I have to think about? Help me.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been thinking a lot about this, particularly as I think about the way that I'm going to vote and the way that I approach this issue. And just for context, like, I grew up in a really conservative family. You know, I was Christian since I was 7, pastor. My dad was in the military. So, I mean, like, you know, we were Republican for most of my life. And I would say that I lived in Boston for a little while, and that changed my own political ideas and thoughts. And I'm probably considered myself a moderate, with no affiliation towards one party. And so I really try to ask myself, like, okay, I have this right to vote as a citizen of the US. Like, how do I go about doing this? And I think the first thing that I found really helpful as I think about this issue was a friend of mine posted this image on Facebook where she was talking about her pro-life position. And this was something that I think was going around by several people. And so I think they added different words to it, and then it's kind of like made its way. But this is what it says. It says, my pro-life position cares about unborn life, malnourished life, impoverished life, discriminated life, mass incarcerated life, racially traumatized life, First Nation life, cage at the border life, healthcare less life, disabled life, LGBTQ plus life, impacted by guns life, Israeli life, Palestinian life, US life, international life, military families life, war-torn families life, Muslim life, religious freedom life, climate change impacted life, prematurely ended life, graciously extended life, frontline pandemic life, 216,000 plus COVID-19 lost life, the sacredness of all life. And I think this is where the issue of one issue voting comes really into, like, full display, right? Like, unborn life is one thing on a spectrum of a lot of different issues. And if we're going to say that we care about life from conception unto death, then we have to ask ourselves, like, okay, these candidates, how are they caring for all the other different experiences of life after children are born, right? The kids who are alive now, the adults who are alive now, the teenagers, the middle schoolers, high schoolers, college students, you know, young married couples, families, like, how are the policies affecting all of those people? And I think it's something that we have to really think about, that, you know, we can't just be on some moral high ground. And to your point, just think of abortion as a simplistic issue, because when we say we're pro-life, you know, that's from conception to death. And it's a lot broader than we think. And I think that's the first way that I would talk to somebody about thinking about their pro-life position. I would say, you know, if you have a candidate who you're voting for because they're pro-life, well, how are they and the policies they represent impacting all these other spheres of human life that we experience? That's kind of the first thing I'd say.
Yeah, I think a lot of times what happens is people get so caught up in that one issue and their opinion that they don't understand the impact, the kind of the side ripple effects of whatever they're believing in or whatever they're voting for. And actually, this kind of goes back to what's going on with the pandemic and the shutdowns and all this stuff. And, like, I forget if I mentioned this before on the podcast, but I feel like a lot of my connections somehow got to this point where I see the spectrum from maybe not far right to far left, but pretty right to pretty left. And I guess the way I could describe that is, like, there's people on both sides that are in my network where I see the stuff they post, I'm like, oh, that's a little ridiculous. Forgive me for saying that.
Yeah.
And then same thing on the other perspective, right? And then there's a lot of stuff more in the middle where like this person is clearly more right than I am on the political spectrum, but I can kind of see your point. I can see where you're coming from, given your background, et cetera. And that goes vice versa on the other side. Which kind of, I say that because during the pandemic, I saw a lot of different responses to the shutdown itself. And on one end, it's like, no, we have to shut everything down because that's going to slow the spread of COVID-19 and we're going to save lives, or at least give the hospitals and the medical staff the time they need to be able to take care of these things, which I understand. But then the other perspective is on the more economical side. If everything is shut down, these business owners they can't work, they can't make money. There is a direct effect on their welfare, their families. Some of them, I don't know if anybody died directly as a result of having to close their businesses, but this is going to have years and years and years of effect and impact on their lives. And then if it's get even more extreme, unfortunately, a lot of mental health in this world, I believe, is tied to financial security. And if you lose that financial security and all of a sudden you're not just worried about yourself, but your family, the suicide rates went up because of it, right? And that's not to say that one is more valuable than the other. Like, do we stop this immediate death from the virus, or do we think about long-term effects of the economy? But the problem with quote unquote single issue voting is sometimes we're so focused on shutting down everything to protect everybody that we forget the damage that's being done kind of as a side effect. And the other side is like, we're so concerned about the economy. We're so concerned about people that need to go to work and make money and make, you know, provide for their families, that we forget that because of this extra activity, we're probably spreading the virus more and other people are more at risk. And it's for me, like, I don't care which side of that spectrum you land on. What's important is you understand what's going on. Because if you understand the big picture, whichever side you end up on, at least you've seen the other perspective. And then you decided, well, as important as that is, I value this a little bit more, which is why I'm leaning this way. And then to bring it back to voting, right? The reason why I feel like single issue voting, whether it's abortion or anything else, is a problem is because to me, that means you haven't considered the big picture.
Right.
And if we were to go to abortion, right? Like, what if this person is pro-life and they outlaw abortion, but they hate everyone, right? They send everybody to war, kill everyone. And like, we've missed the whole point. Mm-hmm. And that kind of just goes back to what you were saying, man. Like, we have to learn to navigate all these issues, but for some reason we don't. And we default to not. Do you think it's a matter of ignorance? Do you think it's a matter of being lazy and it exploring? Are we stuck in our echo chambers? What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, the answer that we always come to here in this podcast, and because it's both important to you and I, Paul, and to the community that listens to this, is that there is a failure or maybe a lack of desire of wanting to listen, truly listen. And for me, you know, again, when we talk about listening here, we're not saying you have to agree with the other person. We're not saying that you have to like be 100% convinced or persuaded. We're just saying that we want you to acknowledge and be aware that the other person and their viewpoint exists. And I feel like that's what people struggle with. You know, they don't want to listen. They don't even want to acknowledge that awareness. They don't even want to see the person, hear the person in front of them. And honestly, every time we do that, we dehumanize each other. Every time we are unwilling to hear each other and receive each other and what each other has to offer, we dehumanize each other and we become less and less human. Right. So the way to become more and more human is to do the opposite of that, to listen and to care and to receive. And it doesn't mean that you have to agree. It just means that you have to allow your understanding to go beyond your own selfish thoughts and to recognize the existence of another person. You know, we're not living as much as we want to say that we are individuals and we have our own individual rights and our freedoms. The reality of every person on this planet, they don't live that way. And I think that's a really, really important thing to remember.
Sorry, I got so much stuff going through my head. I don't know, man. I feel like this election, and probably beginning with the last election, there's just been so much angst built up for the regular person who doesn't care that much about politics. All of a sudden, they have to care, which I think that's a good thing, right? Now, all of a sudden, people who didn't care before now actually care about what's going on in the country, one way or the other. And now that I say that out loud, I'm wondering, like, maybe that's why there are so many people who vote with such a small perspective in mind. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, in the sense where, like, okay, hold on, let me step back. I don't think it's done intentionally all the time. Like, we're talking about one issue voters who choose to focus on that one issue. But I think a lot of times there's people that kind of grow up in these small bubbles, small political bubbles, let's call them, where that's the only issue that they're really familiar with. Mm-hmm. And I remember growing up, my parents were very much like that. Like, we want to vote conservative because generally they believe in what the Bible says. They want to keep prayer in schools. They want to keep God everywhere, and they're right. Pro-life. Like, okay, mm-hmm. That makes sense. But as you get older and older, you realize that's important, right? Don't get me wrong. That's all important for people who think that's important. But there's also things that aren't under that bubble that we have to consider as human beings as well, and how exactly. That affects our communities around us.
100%.
So I think what I would encourage people who are listening to this and who do take pro-life seriously, because you should, pro-life versus pro-choice, you should take that very seriously. And great job for taking it seriously and thinking through it and having a stance on that. But try to explore beyond that. Like, what else does, stay in pro-life. What else does pro-life look like outside of this abortion issue? What does pro-life look like? What does the economy that you want to look like if it's going to push for your view of pro-life, right? Because these things are all kind of intertwined together, right?
I think it's true for pro-choice people too, though, right? Right. Yeah. Like, for pro-choice people who are like, you know, that is not a human life. I refuse to acknowledge that as a human life. It's like, well, why do you have that set of beliefs? And mm-hmm. could it be possible that if there's a whole group of other people or an individual that's right in front of you who's saying something different, can you acknowledge their perspective? Can you acknowledge where they're coming from? Right? And that's essentially what we're talking about. Like, we're going to have people on two sides of any issue, and we don't necessarily need those two people to come into a consensus. But if we could listen to each other and bring some awareness, I feel like it could really be a powerful thing. Now, I know some people are like, well, is it possible to be, you know, a pro-choice voter, but still be pro-life? And I was having this thought, and I think it's a really, I don't know, it's an interesting thought. I'm still thinking about it, so I don't have it perfected in my mind at all. But I realized that, like, you know, okay, so now we're talking the Christian perspective again, right? So God gives humans free will, right? He gives us the ability to choose what to do with our bodies, what to do with our minds, what we do with our time. But he is not at all for the things that we like, that what we call sin, right? That mm-hmm. lead to the destruction of those things. And so this is so fascinating, right? If we were to be like, you know, sin, let's say sin, you put in the place of abortion, sin is the issue, right? I'm going to vote against sin. I don't ever want sin to happen. Well, God's like, well, I'm going to give them the choice. But is he for sin because he has given us the choice? No, of course not. He's 100% not for that because he knows how damaging it can be, right? In the same way, I think it's very possible for a pro-choice voter to be like, you know, or like a pro-life person who cares about unborn children to say, you know what, like, I'm going to consider the broad spectrum of all that is happening, and maybe consider how that candidate that I'm supporting is going to affect all those other things, you know. Or for a pro-choice person who says, I'm going to vote for a woman's right to choose, right, that and still be against abortion. It's possible to be nuanced in that way, because essentially you're saying, I'm going to vote for them to have the freedom to make a choice but I completely stand against the destruction of abortion. Like, it's totally possible to be complex and nuanced. And I think as Christians, it's even more so because that's how I see God doing. Yeah. Like, he doesn't force us, right, to always do the right thing. If you look at the Bible over and over again, he keeps giving humanity freedom to make a choice about what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And so, but he's completely against the destruction that we bring on ourselves, right? And the bad choices we make. And so it's totally possible to be aware of the other side, to allow that to affect the way you think, and then to make a conscious choice, a mature choice, a more heightened, developed, nuanced choice as it comes to not just abortion, but all the issues.
Yeah. Let me add to that just with the example that I forget where I heard it from, whether it was my wife's specific case or from a book that she was studying from. But basically, there was a scenario where a mom got pregnant, and it was just a complicated pregnancy. And the baby, don't quote me on these exact percentages because I might be off a little bit. But basically, if you carry the baby, if the mom carried the baby to term, the mom would die 100%. Like, there's no way she's going to survive carrying this child. But the issue was that if the baby, even if she carried the baby to term, there's only a 20% or so chance of survival of that child. But there's a 100% chance that mom would die. What does it mean to be pro-life in that situation? Mm-hmm. Right? And I think the numbers do make a difference in that sense, because in one scenario, the mom dies for sure. And there's a good chance you're going to lose both lives.
Right.
But then the other way around, being pro-life means that you can abort, you can't abort the child. No, being pro-choice. See, the reason why I'm even confused explaining this pro-life, pro-choice right now is because what does it mean to be pro-life and pro-choice in that context?
Right.
And the whole concept of pro-choice is not necessarily you make the choice to end the life of this child, but you're giving that option to the woman based on her beliefs about, if she's a Christian, then what she believes that God says about these things. If she's not a Christian or completely believes something else, that's again, according to her beliefs. But the whole point is to give her a choice. But I think what I want to emphasize with that, just on top of what you were saying, is pro-choice does not necessarily mean that you are not pro-life.
And exactly. Yeah.
It's society's natural inclination to take these two things as complete opposites. And if you actually deal with these things in the real world and hear about these situations and listen to other perspectives, it, like we say all the time, it's just so gray. Like,
right.
They do coexist. Well, we have to figure out how they coexist. Otherwise, we're just going to assume the worst and then hate people.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the other classic example that people talk about is, what do you do in case of rape? Yeah. You know, when someone is raped and they are impregnated, like, what do you do in that situation? You know? And so I think this is it, right? Our listeners who are listening here, I mean, I'm going to hope that all of you guys are going to listen to us and just listen to us. You can get mad. You can get offended. You can find resistance. You can find resonance what we say. And that's totally cool. Like, we're still going to be here for you. Like, we appreciate you. Love you 100%. We're for you all the way. I hope that what you hear is that, yeah, life is complex and situations are complex and issues are complex. And voting, you know, is complex. And we have to think about all the ways that our vote affects people. And we have to be willing to hear the stories of those who are on the other side of all those issues and not be so narrow-minded in our bubbles, because that's our tendency.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Our point today is not to make a political stance. It's not to make a pro-life versus pro-choice argument. It's to show that both sides exist. And if we can't look at both sides first before deciding what we want to do and how we want to vote, then we're not doing the due diligence that we need to make a responsible choice. So that's our big picture, right? Look at everything. Look at as much as you can and then simplify it with the vote that you make. But don't do a one-issue thing, because you know you know that's not all there is to it, right?
Right. Don't vilify people. Don't cop out and don't vilify people on the other end. You know, just because they hold a view, like to your point, doesn't mean that they're against whatever you think they're against. It's far more complicated than we know. And we owe each person, like each human life, the dignity to be aware of that complexity and recognize it.
Yeah. I think if you've done due diligence, it'll be harder to judge and vilify people because you can see their perspective. So they kind of go hand in hand. One last thing I would add to this whole voting issue is I feel like a lot of times we take this ramp up for the next 2 weeks until the election is done. And then if it goes our way, like, yes, we're good for the next 4 years. You know, we don't have to do anything. And if it doesn't, then we can just hit our lives and for the next 4 years, blame everything on the wrong candidate that got chosen. But the reality is, no matter who we vote for and no matter who gets elected for president, the president is not going to come and, you know, intervene in your life directly. The changes that happen around you are a result of what you do and how you listen to the people around you and how you continue to build up the community. So vote for who you're going to vote for. Know why you're doing it. Look at all the perspectives. Give people the due diligence of at least the effort of trying to understand where they're coming from. And then let's move on, right? Because life goes on and we can still be good people who do good things and embrace this culture of listening around us and embrace, did I say that correctly? Embrace the culture of listening around us, because that's going to change literally our communities regardless of who's in office. So that being said, I don't know if you have more words of wisdom, JD, but
yeah, I think the only thing I have left to say is just to echo what you just said, that ultimately, right, not one human being is going to make it right for everyone. It's going to take all of us. And it starts with listening and recognizing that we all have different perspectives. And that diversity is not a threat to our unity or to our union. It is a gift. It's a precious gift. We have to learn how to see it and value it and treasure it and allow that to be the foundation on which we build a better world. So let's go.
Yes, sir. All right, everyone. That's it for today. If you have forgotten already, we're at operation.codemy.com. Connect with us at operation.codemy, mainly on Instagram, because that's where we like to hang out, because we are old and don't know anything else. If you're a young person, if you're young and want to help us out, please, please connect us, message us. We would love some young energy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we're not that old, but definitely not in our 20s anymore. But anyways, that's besides the point. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please leave us a review. If you found any value, it helps us to organically spread some of the things that we're talking about. Thanks for joining us. Until next time.